So this week's parasha is Parashat Vayetze, and this is a parasha that's one of my favorite parashiot because it has so many things in it. Really, one of my best parasha articles are on Parashat Vayetze. And we're going to go through them just one at a time. In Parashat Vayetze, we find a story where Yaakov Avinu meets Rachel. And Rachel tells him, after Yaakov proposes to Rachel, he says, I want to marry you. I think we'll be perfect together. Rachel tells Yaakov, if you want to marry me, just know that my father is the world's biggest trickster. And Yaakov, when he heard that, he said, don't worry about that, because I have in my genes also this ability to trick, because my uncle is actually your father. My mother's brother is your father, and I have in me the genes of my mother's brother of being able to trick. So if your father tricks me, I could trick him back. And I'm not worried if at the wedding he's going to try to switch you with somebody else, because we'll make now between us what we call the simanim, which means that Yaakov made up with Rachel the simanim, the signs that Yaakov is going to know that this is actually Rachel coming to the chuppah, Rachel coming to the wedding. What were the signs, the simanim, that Yaakov made up with Rachel? So our rabbis teach us in the Midrashim that the signs were, he taught her the laws of how to be a Jewish mother, a Jewish woman, which is, first of all, the laws of family purity. Second, the law of challah. And third, the law of candle lighting. These were the three signs that were given over from Yaakov to Rachel. And he told her that at the wedding, when I'm going to ask you about to see that you're actually Rachel, not another woman, you will tell me these three laws of how a woman could be a Jewish mother. It turned out that at the wedding, actually, Lavan actually did trick Yaakov, and he did switch Leah with Rachel. And when he did so, Rachel was realizing that Leah was going to be in the situation, a very uncomfortable situation, where she's going to come to the chuppah, and she's not going to know the signs, and to know how to tell Yaakov that she's actually Rachel. In other words, that Yaakov would be able to discover that she was Leah. And Rachel didn't want her sister Leah to feel bad about that. Now, Rachel and Leah, actually, they looked exactly alike. They were even identical twins. And the difference was that Leah, her eyes were soft because she cried a lot, because she knew that she and her younger sister were twins, and her aunt Rivka had also twins, Esav and Yaakov. So if Esav is the older one and she's the older one, that means that they were meant to be, and Yaakov would be with his younger sister Rachel. So she would cry a lot when she heard about how Esav's behavior was. When she heard all the bad things Esav was doing, she said, how could I be the wife of such a man? So now she's actually very happy that Lavan is going to marry her to Yaakov, and Rachel is seeing the predicament that Leah is going to go through. So Rachel doesn't want Leah to feel bad, so she gives her the simanim. She tells her these are the ways that a woman could be a Jewish mother. She keeps the family purity, she keeps also the challah laws, and also she keeps the laws of lighting the candles for Shabbat. So when what actually happened was, at the wedding, the night of the wedding, the people at the wedding, they knew that Leah was actually switched on Rachel. Lavan put out all the candles at the wedding so that it was very dark, so Yaakov would not be able to see. And the people wanted to hint to Yaakov that the girl that he was actually marrying was not Rachel, it was actually Leah. So one of the mefarshim, I think it's called the Balei Tosfot, the Zekenim, I forgot what it's called, Da'at Zekenim. The Da'at Zekenim says that the woman, the people at the wedding, they made the sound like the Sephardi woman they make at a simcha. La 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 is like they were hinting that it's actually Leah. Leah, Leah, Leah is la 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 la. And that's what they were hinting to Yaakov, that you should know that it's not Rachel, it's actually Leah. Now, after this tremendous thing of self-sacrifice that Rachel did, we know that she was rewarded that Hashem, when the Jewish people go down to Galut, when they go out to exile after the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, so Avraham came to Hashem and said, where are my children? They're not in Eretz Yisrael. And what's going to happen to them? And Hashem says, well, they disobeyed the Torah. And Avraham tries to be Militz Yosher, to be defendant for the Jewish people. And Hashem doesn't listen to Avraham's call. And then Yitzhak tries, and Yaakov tries, and Moshe Rabbeinu tries. And then finally when Rachel tries, and she says, Hashem, you're upset at the Jewish people because they brought it Avodah Zarah, and they put the idol into the Beit HaMikdash, and you can't forgive them for that act. Hashem, you can't give up the jealousy that you have for the Avodah Zarah, the idol. I gave up my jealousy for my sister. I was able to give in to her and let her marry Yaakov. And to that Hashem says, Ko amar Hashem. He tells Rachel, he says, Ko berama nishma. Bechin tamurim. There's a sound, there's a voice on high that's heard. Bechin tamurim, a bitter cry. Rachel mevakal banea. Rachel is crying over her children, kienenu, because they're not around in the Eretz Yisrael. And Hashem tells her, Mini kolech mi bechi. Stop your voice from crying. Ve'enayich mi dim'a. And your eyes from tears. Ki yesh sechalef ulatech, because there's reward for your good deed. Ve'shavu banim l'gvulam, and because of your good deed, the Jews will come back to the land of Eretz Yisrael. Which means to us, this is a psukim in the Navi. That's the reason why Rachel was buried in Beit Lechem. She was buried not in Hebron, because when the Jews were leaving Eretz and leaving Yerushalayim, they passed Yerushalayim to Galut through Beit Lechem, and they would cry on the kever of Kever Rachel, and Rachel cried to Hashem, where are my children going? And that's the reason why she was buried in such a place, in order for this special power of prayer, the power of defendant that only Rachel had, because of this great deed of giving up her sister, to giving her sister the simanim to marry Yaakov. Now, we know that Rachel didn't have children for the first 6 years after she was married. Rachel and Leah both got married after the first 7 years that Yaakov worked for Lavan. Right away he married Leah, and then after Leah he also took Rachel. He didn't wait another 7 years. After he married Rachel, they had with Leah four children, and then Leah. After four children of Leah, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, then Leah brought in her midwife, Rachel brought in her midwife, which was Bilhah, and Yaakov had from her two children, and then Leah brought in her midwife, which was Zilpah, and also brought in two children from that. So now Yaakov has four from Leah, two from Rachel's midwife, two from Leah's midwife. So already up to eight. There's only four tribes left that could be. And then an interesting story happens in the parasha. Rachel's not able to have children. She's crying. And Leah has already four, and the other ones have two each. So we're up to already eight. There's only four left. And Rachel, at this point, she notices that Leah's son Reuven comes home with dudaim. Dudaim is a flower, mandrakes. These dudaim flowers, they have in them, according to different explanation. One explanation is that the mandrakes, according to Ibn Ezra, have at the bottom of them, in the root of the mandrakes, is the shape of a body, the shape of a person. Has the roots are in the shape of arms and legs. I actually saw a picture of the roots of the mandrakes. It's amazing. It actually does look like a person. And that is a sgula for having children, having these mandrakes. And Reuven brought back these mandrakes to his mother, Leah. Leah has these mandrakes, and now she's going to be easier for her to have more children. And Rachel has none yet. And if Leah's going to have more children, so that means that Rachel's going to have less. Rachel sees and says, please, Leah, can I have from your mandrakes of your son? And Leah answers back to Rachel. And Leah told Rachel, Hamat kachtech et ishi. Not only did you take my husband, you also want to take the mandrakes of my son Reuven. And Rachel told back to Leah, Lachem yishkav imachta halayla tachat duda ebenech. You're right, it's fine. That's the reason, because of what you just said, I'll take the mandrakes, you take Yaakov for tonight instead of me. And that's what happened. Leah gave the mandrakes to Rachel. And Leah waited for Yaakov to come home that night to Rachel's tent. And when he was coming on the way to Rachel's tent, she came out and says, hey, I already bought you for tonight. Here she heard Yaakov coming back on his donkey. And the donkey, at that night that they were together, they were able to have Leah had Yisachar. Yisachar is from the name that Yesh Sachar, I bought off my husband for this night. And because he had the donkey that night, she heard the donkey of Yaakov. So the icon of Yisachar is Yisachar Chamor Garem. Yisachar's icon is the donkey. Now, what's mind-boggling here, Rav Shlomo Shadron asks, what does that mean that Leah tells Rachel, not only did you take my husband, you also want to take my son's mandrakes, my son's dudaim? I don't understand. Rachel could have just said back to her, I took your husband? I was the one who gave you the simanim. This is a wild question. And this leads up to another question, is if we go on a little bit further in the Psukim, Leah has, at that point, two children, Yisachar and Zevulun. And then right after that, Rachel is answered by, remembered by God, and Hashem opened the womb of Rachel in the merit that she gave the simanim to her sister Leah. That's amazing. What happened until now? Until now, she didn't have that merit of giving the simanim. She had to suffer 6 years of not having children and now having six. Why did she have to suffer and not have her merit, and only now, after the story with her sister, that her sister said to her with the mandrakes, says, not only you want to take my husband, you also want my son's mandrakes, only then she merited to have children? And the answer is, such an amazing answer, Shalom Shadron says. This answer is so amazing, I never even learned a parasha like this. And when I understood this answer, my wife walked into the room and she says, Yosef, okay, do we want to go out tonight? I said, you know something? I actually want to go out, but if you don't mind, let's go to Kevar Rachel tonight to go out. And she's like, wow, what happened, Kevar Rachel? What's going on? So I said, you know something? I just saw the most beautiful pshat, a new explanation, new understanding of who Rachel was. I said, I want to go tonight to Kevar Rachel. And she's like, oh, tell me what's this new chidush. And this is what Rav Shlomo Shadron says. This is amazing chidush. And this will give us a different understanding or appreciation of who Rachel, our matriarch, was. You see, Rachel never told Leah ever that the simanim that I'm giving you, the laws of the Jewish mother, that she has to keep family purity, and that she has to keep challah, and she has to keep lighting the candles for the night of Shabbat. She didn't tell her sister that I was the intended one to Yaakov, and here are the simanim that we made up between us. She just gave her a challah class. She said, you're going to marry this man, Yaakov. I just happen to know the halachot, the laws of what it means to be a Jewish mother, and here they are, A, B, C. So Leah didn't even know anything. She didn't know that Rachel was giving her husband. And Rachel never let Leah know that. Leah never knew from Rachel that she ever gave up anything for her. Rachel was extra sensitive. Not only did she give Leah her husband, and she didn't want Leah to feel bad and embarrassed at the night of the wedding, and she didn't want to have to get stuck and marry Esav. Not only that, she didn't even let Leah know that she was doing that for her. That's a whole new level. It's a whole new level of Mesirut Nefesh. And that's the explanation. Why only at this point, after Leah tells Rachel, not only you want to take my husband, you also want my son's mandrakes, you also want my son's dudaim, at that point Hashem says, okay, now this is a new level of Mesirut Nefesh. For this new level, here, take the merit you could have a child. Now you deserve it. Now you could have your womb opened up. This is such a big chidush to me. This new level of Misru Nefesh. And I'd like to take this a step further and say what Rev Zev Getzel, who is the Mashgiach of Yeshiva Itri, said. He pointed out to something so mind-boggling, which is that when Rachel went and she gave up for her, to her sister, the Simanim, she gave up her husband to her sister, Leah. So we think of that as such an amazing thing, and she really gave up so much self-sacrifice. And then she's going to... the truth of the matter is that, let's say that what would have happened, let's go to default. Let's say, no, Rachel would not have given up. Like many women would have done, they say, okay, it's my husband, it's my intended, I'm not going to give this Simanim, I'm not going to give the signs to Yaakov, I'm not going to give it over to my sister that she could marry my husband. I don't have to do that, right? So she'll go through some embarrassment, but it is what it is. Let's say Rachel would have taken that route. What would have happened next? Okay, so at the wedding, Yaakov realizes it's not Rachel, it's Leah. So he says, I'm sorry, this must have been a mistake here. We're at the wrong wedding. I'm marrying Rachel, your sister. And they get married. And then what happens? They don't live happily ever after. Because Rachel's barren. Rachel doesn't have a merit to have children. She goes 10 years and there's no children. And Hashem doesn't have a merit to open up her womb because she never gave any self-sacrifice yet. So what happens after 10 years of Yaakov not having children from Rachel? Yaakov has to have his 12 tribes. He knows he has to have 12 tribes. He sees it in prophecy. Yaakov is going to divorce Rachel and marry Leah. And then Rachel is going to be stuck outside and she's going to marry Esav. So what actually ended up happening here was that Rachel's self-sacrifice was actually her saving grace. That was the merit she had into having children. If she wouldn't have had it, she would have nothing. She would have 10 years, and then she's out. And now, only because of what she did, she deserved the children, she deserved the chance to stay married to her husband, Yaakov. This is such a flip on the whole story. Such a flip. And the reason why this is such a flip for me is because in coaching, we have a rule. In coaching, we have a rule called the 6P rule by Brian Tracy. Prior proper planning prevents poor performance. If you want to have perform great, so what we do is we become planners. Now, my natural tendency, I'm Yosef, and Yosef, the nature of every person, he has something from his name that is like the name in Tanakh. The name in Tanakh of Yosef, Yosef was known to be a planner. Yosef saw into the future. He saw about the dreams of the future, of how the brothers are going to come bow down to him. Yosef saw the dreams of the Paro. He saw into the future that 7 years later there's going to be famine, 7 years going to be plenty first. He saw into the future. He came with a plan for Paro how to do things. My nature is to see into the future, to plan what's tomorrow, to plan to a week from now. That's why naturally I ended up liking this concept of coaching, because that's my nature. That's my name. But a lot of times I find my greatest strength of being always planning and performing best, sometimes I try to use my planning and to say, let's try to plan my life. Let's see how I could plan how things are going to be. How can I plan, you know, like they say, live the destiny by design, not by default. You want to have your destiny to have a designed destiny, a designed future. I want my destiny to be designed. I want to plan out my destiny. And sometimes the words that the Goyim use in the coaching concepts, they went into how I looked at the world, and I started to realize my greatest strength of being a planner became my greatest weakness of trying to expect that that's going to end up being what's going to end up happening. That my expectations of myself also became somewhat of expectations from God. And this is something we have to be very, very careful about. Is that what we think, what we are doing, and our actions, and our hishtadlut, and our planning, and our trying, that it's only in the sense of our performance. It's only that prior proper planning prevents poor performance. Of I could plan out who I want to be, I could plan out my performance, but I can't plan God's performance. I can only have expectations for myself. I can't have expectations from God. And this point here of Rachel Imenu coming to a situation where she did what seems like she was doing something, the right thing. She did the right thing. In life, we only have sometimes two choices. Most times in life, we only have two choices because we only have a choice of do the right thing or not do the right thing. Hashem has his destiny anyway going to happen. What's going to happen is going to happen anyway. Rachel, by her doing her good deed, she didn't end up giving up her husband. She ended up with her good deed meriting, and now she's going to end up having children. And that's also what we have to think about, because I want to just say a story to explain what I'm saying. You see, like I said earlier, my natural tendency is to be a planner and to think into the future. And I'm going to mention something that, you know, when I do it, Hitbodedut, when I think, I usually try to do this 5-6 areas where I go into Hitbodedut, and when I think about, when I do meditation. So one of the things I do in meditation is I thank Hashem for every single thing in my life. Another thing I do in meditation is that I look and think about all the options of how I could do things better and how things could be better in my life. Another thing in meditation that I do is I think about how Hashem is really in charge of every single thing in my world. And another thing is I ask Hashem for every single thing that I want. So here we said so far five things. I'll go to a sixth thing. Is one of my meditations is as I realize and I admit to all the things that I made a mistake about. Where did I make a mistake? Where did I make a mistake in my life? Where was I wrong? And I say, Hashem, I was wrong about this, I was wrong about that. And one of the things I was wrong about is a specific story that I want to get to now. The story is that when I was in high school, I remember that I was a serious boy. I was helping students that were younger than me. And there were two students from the Syrian community that were in the yeshiva with me where I was in America. Both of those students, their mothers were shadchanim, were famous matchmakers in the community. And I said to myself, of course, I'm doing this to help these boys. But in the back of the head, I was saying to myself, you know, Yosef, you're really set up. You're really okay now. Now that you're learning with these guys, you for sure have your shidduch. The two famous shadchanim in the community, Hashem's going to take care of you. You have your destiny under control. Turns out that in 12th grade, first year of Beit Midrash, first year high school of post high school in yeshiva, things didn't go the way that I wanted them in yeshiva, and I felt I have to move on in life. I have to go on to. I went to Eretz Yisrael. I came to Mikdash Melech, to yeshiva here, and the first day in yeshiva, and I have a lot of resentment about how things didn't work out for me in yeshiva in America. Anyway, when I came to yeshiva in Israel, so the first day that I was in yeshiva, I went to daven next door at the time in Bayit Vegan, in the shtibel, the amshin of shtibel, the amshin of minyan factory, and I took off my watch to put on my tefillin, and I prayed shachrit in this shtibel. After shachrit, I came back to the yeshiva, and I found that my watch was not with me. So I went back running to the place where I davened. I saw in the place where I put on my tefillin that my watch wasn't there, and there was a sign on the wall that said Ashavat Aveda Matzanu Sha'on Mishpachat Ashki Afshal LeKablo Al Pi Simanim. We found your watch. Come and get it with the simanim to show that you are the real owner, and we'll give it back to you, the Ashki family. So I went to this place where they said the address. I came, I saw three boys sitting there on the steps. I gave the simanim the sign to show that I was the real owner of it. And they said to me, okay, here's your watch. They quickly went running to the room. They brought me the watch. I met the father of these boys 2 weeks later, and I told him how his boys, it's an amazing thing that he's so lucky to bring up such a family in Eretz Yisrael. And the father tells me, we'd love to have you for a Shabbat meal. So I came to his house for a Shabbat meal, and I came again and again. I became like family there. And I learned throughout the year, first year in Mikdash Melech, then I went on to Yeshiva of Ritzvi Kaplan, which is a break off of Brisk. After a year with Tzvi Kaplan, I was they had me before a week before I was flying back to America for Ben Azmanim, and they said to me, if you would find a shidduch in America, would you go out? So I said to them, if something was good, I would definitely take it seriously. So at that time, at the Shabbat table, the oldest son told the father, said, Abba, don't you have that girl that you were always you're trying to look for, that girl Dali, that she is looking for shidduch and you're trying to find her? Maybe that's good for Yosef. So the father said, yeah, maybe, Yosef, would you be interested in a girl from Israel? A girl that's originally... I said, well, does she speak English? She said, yeah, she speaks English. Where's she from? She's from Hong Kong. So I said, Hong Kong, English? I said, this sounds interesting. Is she Sephardi? She said, yes. I said, okay, sounds interesting. Well, that's my parents. And my parents looked into it, and they said, great. And 2 weeks later, I was engaged. So in the end, my planning was just so off. Like, I planned my destiny. I thought, wow, I'm trying my best. And every time I'm seeing about in my life, everything that goes through is just whatever I try in one way, it ends up coming from some other way. And we just could do our shtadlut, but we can't expect things to happen. So you see from Rachel's story here is that she tries and that she's doing what looks like a self-sacrifice. And that sacrifice that she's doing is actually her saving, is actually what Hashem brings back to her and gives back to her. But we have to remember always that Hashem anyway has his way of doing things. And this is where I want to get to here, is that this point that I want to sum it up this first part of the class, is that in the end of the day, there's really three stories that are going on in this world. There's my story, there's your story, and there's God's story. My story is, everybody has a story. Everybody, the way we work is through story. There's even a therapy called bibliotherapy, which is that they help people to overcome the things through stories. Our minds work like through stories. So my story is how, where I'm coming from, where I think I'm going, how I expect things to be. That's my story. Your story is what anybody else is who is in my life. They also have a story. And if I want to get along with them, I have to also sometimes, their story sometimes conflicts with my story, and that's when we sometimes have friction between me and the other person in my life. If I want to get along with that person, I have to be able to buy into his story. Then there's also God's story. God also has a story of how he wants things to be and how what he expects from us. And if I want to get along with God, I also have to buy into his story. And sometimes I have to do misrut nefesh. I have to give up from my story, like Rachel did. She gave up from her story, from her husband, for God, because... And when God sees that, God says, you gave into my story, so I will also come in and give into your story. When we show Hashem that we're moser nefesh for God's story, so God comes across and says, okay, I'll be moser nefesh for your story. I will change, kaviyachol. I will change what I wanted and how I expected things and change the destiny that was supposed to be, that you were supposed to be a barren woman. I'm going to change that for you. I'm going to make things different for you. This is such a mind-boggling concept for me. And when I thought of this idea, I walked to shul for Arvit, and Arvit is just, it's one building away, two buildings away, and right in the shul where I went to Arvit, one of the boys that I once coached and I helped him, he was looking there all like a chatan, like ready to get engaged, and I asked him, what's going on? He said, yeah, this is my engagement party. I said, oh, really, you're getting engaged? I'm so happy for you. And he says, well, why don't you come in? I'm so happy that you're able to invite you. So I came to the engagement party, and the Rav said something amazing. The Rav said, why do we make engagement parties? Why do we make engagement parties? In the Torah, there's no root or reason behind an engagement party. What's the point of engagement parties? Because in the Torah, we only have kiddushin and nisuim, which is kiddushin is putting on the ring on the finger, and nisuim is chupa, or going into the cheder yichud, but making an engagement party has no root in the Torah or in the Halacha. So why do they do it? And he said the point is that we know before a person is born, before a boy is born, 40 days before he's born, Hashem says, the bat kol, a heavenly voice that goes out and says that there will be bat ploni leploni. This girl is going to marry this boy. And we know that from the 6 days of creation, from the time that Hashem created the world until now, what has Hashem been doing? Hashem has constantly been mezaveg zivugim. Hashem is always, the Midrash tells us, what is Hashem doing all day? Hashem is making shidduchim, making shidduchim, making. What does that mean that Hashem is doing? Why does it take Hashem so long to make a shidduch? The answer is, is that from the time that the person was born, he already is destined. He has a certain, Hashem already has a story. This is, boy is going to marry that girl. And throughout a person's whole life, Hashem is twisting and turning the person's life. He's meeting this person and that person. Hashem is changing every single day, that in 21, 22, 23, 24 years, 30 years, 35 years, the person is going through his life and he's always twisting and turning. Hashem is changing his life that he's ready to one day be able to meet that person and get engaged. And all the circumstances that change, Hashem is doing everything. All the irony is just there because Hashem is changing things around. That's what it means. Hashem is making shidduchim. He's making the life of the person, the story of the person work out. That he's able to meet the story of the other of his spouse and end up finally getting engaged. At the time of the engagement, at the time that they decided, they closed between that they're ready to get married, that they decided that is a tremendous simcha because Hashem is finally the full circle. Everything worked out nicely. So when I realize this, that there's any way a destiny, there's any way a plan, we only have a choice of doing the right thing or not doing the right thing in life. We only have, that's all our choice is. All we have about our planning and planning and planning is just planning for me being the best me I could be. The planning is not about designing my destiny. The destiny by design, not by default. Because you can't design your destiny. You can only design how you're going to perform. You can only expect and make expectations of who you're going to be, expectations of myself. You never make expectations of God or the people in my life. This is the first part of the class. I really would appreciate if anybody has any points about this they want to share in this discussion. So if you don't mind, please unmute yourself. You could do a star six. This is something about the story of a person's life. The story of a person's life is so important that he's realizing that you don't have control over your story. You only have control over your mesirut nefesh, what you're going to be willing to give up, what you're going to go into Hashem's story, or what you're willing to do for another person's story. Just that we're on this point of understanding Rachel Imenu, understanding it's a new concept of Rachel Imenu, that Rachel was able to not just do Misrut Nefesh of give over her sister, but she was even willing to hide and had the power of hiding from her sister and even having her sister tell her that you took my husband and she still keeps quiet, which teaches me something fantastic, which is a lot of times we feel like, why don't I have the good that I wish I had? Why isn't Hashem giving me the good? And sometimes Hashem is waiting for you to have a certain misrut nefesh, a certain amount of giving into his what Hashem wants to do. And sometimes it's just an extra step. Like, it's not just like this extra, one little extra step of Rachel's misrut nefesh. That's what tipped the scales. That's what made the difference. That's what was the zchut that ended up making her have the merit of having ability to have a child. There's a beautiful Devar Torah that happened. Because when I was in Ramat Eshkol, I used to have a lot of bachim over for meals. In the first few years of that, when we were married. And one of the boys that came over from Yeshiva Philadelphia, so he was in Rav David Soloveitchik's Yeshiva, and he told me a Dvar Torah from Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, even though I never found in Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's Sefer, about Rachel Imenu. And this Dvar Torah was so fantastic that whoever read it just was mind blown away by this Dvar Torah. And the idea is that we know that after Yaakov worked for Lavan for the first 7 years, he got Rachel. He got Leah, and then he got Rachel. And then afterwards, he worked another 7 years. And at the end of 7 years, he had a child of Yosef from Rachel, right? After Leah had six, and he had the other two from each of the midwives. And then he had one from Rachel, which was Yosef. And then once he has Yosef, he's ready to go back and face Esav, his brother, and go back home to his father Yitzchak, to Eretz Yisrael. And he asks his wives, are you ready to go back home, to go, that we moved from your father's land, from Padan Aram, from Lavan, that we go home to Eretz, are you ready to go back to Eretz Yisrael? And they say, V'ta'an Rachel v'le'ah. Rachel and Leah answered, to Yaakov, and they said, well, what a our father, he treated us like slaves. He sold us like maidservants to you. He made you work to get us. What type of father is he anyway? We have nothing here. Let's go to Eretz Yisrael. Now, if you notice, it Vatan, Rachel, Vada, Rachel and Leah answered. And they gave permission to Yaakov that we should leave, to go back to the Holy Land. So the Bereshit Rabbah says that because Rachel answered before her older sister Leah, because she answered before her sister Leah, that's the reason why she was not going to be buried in Hebron with Yaakov, and rather she would be buried in Bethlehem alone in Kever Rachel, because she answered before her older sister. Sounds very strange to hear this. It sounds like it was a punishment for her, because she answered first before her older sister. That's the reason why she had to be punished, that she had to die earlier, and she had to be buried by Bethlehem on the road, and not be buried in Hebron, in Kever Echel, in Maravta Machpelah. This sounds so strange, because we know from what we said earlier, that the reason why she was buried in the place where she was buried was because she is the one that on the way, when Bnei Yisrael leaves to Galut, when they leave from Yerushalayim on the way to Galut, they come past her gravestone, she's on the way, and they cry. As they leave Yerushalayim, they're crying to Rachel to ask Hashem, and that Rachel is going to ask Hashem for us, that Hashem should please have mercy on us. We know that Hashem tells Rachel, stop crying, you have reward for your good deeds, you have reward for the fact that you gave into your sister Leah, and you let her marry Yaakov, and you gave her the Simanim. So that seems to be the real reason that she's going to be the one who's going to be the defender for the Jewish people and milit yosher on us. Why does it sound now that the reason why she was buried there first was because she was punished, because she answered first before her older sister? And Rav Kamenetsky explains that we know that the Avot, the forefathers, they kept the Torah. So if they kept the Torah, then how could it be that Yaakov married two sisters? The Ramban's question. If the Avot kept the Torah, how could it be that Yaakov married two sisters? In the Torah, you're not allowed to marry two sisters. And the answer is, the Ramban says, is that they only kept the Torah only when they were in Eretz Yisrael. When they went out of Eretz Yisrael, they didn't keep the Torah. That means that the reason why Yaakov was able to be married to Rachel Na'ah in the house of Lavan is only because they were in Chutz La'aretz. Only because they were outside of Eretz Yisrael. So when Yaakov asked Rachel Na'ah if you want to go to Eretz Yisrael, this was not just a simple question if you want to leave your parents' house. It was really a deeper question than that. The question was, which one of you are willing to die? Which one of you are willing to give up the marriage, to leave the marriage, in order for me to be able to go to Eretz Yisrael and learn in Eretz Yisrael? Because we can't be married to two sisters. It's over this once I go to Eretz Yisrael. But Ta'an Rachel v'Le'ah. And Rachel answered first before her older sister Le'ah. And because she answered first, she was the one who has the merit, that Mesru Nefesh that she had, that she was willing at the time, the self-sacrifice. She says, I'm willing to give up for my husband's spirituality. They should be in Eretz Yisrael. In that merit, she's able to say to Hashem, Hashem, I gave up. You're not. Please have mercy on my children that they should have the merit of being in Eretz Yisrael. I gave up for my husband to have a right to be in Eretz Yisrael. I gave up so much. I gave up my life for that. And now you're taking them away from Eretz Yisrael? The self-sacrifice of Rachel Imenu turns out to be that thing that we sacrifice is sometimes the most powerful thing. We don't even see it like that. Look at the sacrifice of Rachel that she had originally, we spoke about before, that she gives her sister. She gives her sister. That was what she married to have children. And now we're saying that the merit that she has in the sacrifice of letting her husband go to Eretz Yisrael, she is going to be the mother of the Jewish people forever and ever, for all the Jewish people, because of that deed that she had. She's willing to give up her life. So it means for the, all the years of Galut, we know we're going to come back to Eretz Yisrael in the merit of Rachel Imenu's self-sacrifice for her husband's chance of having the spirituality of living in Eretz Yisrael. So, when we have self-sacrifice, when we give up something, we have to remember that we're not really giving up. That's going to somehow come back to us. When we do the right thing, we give up sometimes something that's important, something that's more important, then we should always remember that Hashem anyway has His plan. And all of our plans, what we think is looks like should be the way how things should be, is anyway not finite. It's not for sure. It's not set in stone. That Hashem has His story anyway. So this is a point that to me means a lot. If anybody has any feelings about this, please let me if we could discuss it.